and that is what they need to do. They need to stop supporting hacks like the Green Party majority in Arcata, like the Green Party mayor in Santa Monica, Feinstein, like Fitzmaurice. These are people who abuse and disgrace the Green Party label. And I'm particularly upset, of course, because of their homeless stuff. But, I mean, look at what's going on in other matters. I don't see the Arcata, Santa Monica City Council, or Santa Cruz City Council, or any of the Green Party members trying to stand up and say, stop the bombing. In fact, Fitzmaurice did a little two-step of explaining how he couldn't bring up these things because he has to explain to people who favor the bombing why, you know, well, you know, we have to present them with an alternative, and how can we deal with terrorists? Well, you don't do it by creating more terrorists. You don't do it by creating more terror. You do it by helping people understand why terrorism is happening. You don't do it by abandoning civil liberties wholesale in the United States, as is happening here in this country. And Tim Fitzmaurice apparently doesn't have enough guts, nor does Christopher Crone, nor does Ed Porter, nor does Scott Kennedy, to bring up a resolution that says, end the bombing now. Now, we're going to hear people saying, hey, the bombing has been fine. It's resulted in the Taliban being dumped out of Afghanistan. What are you, some kind of Taliban supporter? And the answer is, of course not. But the Taliban is going to move into Pakistan, and that's going to be the next target of our fine, expensive bombers. And why is this an issue for me on my show? Well, it's an issue because it's an issue for all of us. But millions of homeless people are being created in Afghanistan through this process. And Berkeley City Council, five of them, at least had the guts to stand up and talk on this issue, to discuss it, to debate it. Instead, the city council held a town meeting and then crawled back into its hole. I've read a lot of correspondence on this issue in the city council files. If you want to, you can go in and check it out yourself. And it is true that there are a lot of letters and emails that say, don't go near this issue, or we favor the bombing. But there's also a petition, which I was not able to get, but it was presented at the October 23rd City Council meeting, I understand, of more than 700 names, email addresses, phone numbers, and again, I'm not sure exactly what the petition, how it was put together, but it was, as I understand, from talking to Green Party activists, it had hundreds and hundreds of names asking that the bombing stop. And yet, not one council member even put this issue on the agenda for discussion in a meaningful way and move that kind of resolution. Sure, he might have been voted down. Sure, she, and I don't think Emily Riley would have done it, but they might have been voted down. But they would have tried, they would have raised the issue. They're not willing to do that. They want to stick to local politics, but of course ignore local homeless people. It's quite a prickly pair of contradictions, hypocrisy, it is a fit subject for satire, and that's what I'm going to be doing in the Street Shit Sheet, which is the newsletter I used to write quite regularly, and I'm going to be writing again, as I said, hopefully getting it out on the Internet and emailing it. I'll be emailing it out soon. I've emailed out a rough draft before, and hard copies are going around. We had a memorial for Happy John Dine recently, who died, and that's the main story of the Street Shit Sheet. But there's going to be regular writing on this issue, and I'm hopefully going to be a part of that process. Not hopefully, I'm pretty sure I am. Let's see if we can get some updates from Camp Paradise, how things are going. I had been quite nervous that there was going to be police action on Camp Paradise, but I'm pleased so far to say I'm wrong. It looks like, however, that the cellular phone down there is off. A couple things are coming up around Camp Paradise for those of you who are interested. There will be a trial on Monday at 1:30 p.m. in Department 1, unless the city chickens out, which I expect to happen, but maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised. Some of these people are just incorrigibly stupid. This is a perfect opportunity for a lot of media around the issue of the sleeping ban, and I should say actually the camping ban, because the section which the Paradise 8, the eight individuals from Camp Paradise who are going to court at 1:30 in Department 1 on Monday, and that's going to be, I guess, let's see, Monday the 13th, 12th, 19th, Monday the 19th, they were ticketed on August 3rd for camping, that section of the camping prohibited, section of the camping ordinance 6.36.010, C, and it's coming up in Commissioner Joseph's courtroom. And I believe that Attorney Paul Sanford is going to be using the necessity defense, talking about how they may have done the crime, setting up a tent, setting up protective covering, but they did so because they had to. And that's what I'm going to be... I'm actually going to give a call now to Attorney Paul Sanford and see if we can reach him at home. He may not be available, but perhaps he will be. I'm getting some rings here on the phone. I think what I'm going to do actually is try another number. I'm more likely to get through to him there. Paul Sanford has been the pro bono attorney for Camp Paradise since June, and he volunteered after I ran into him at a council session, saying he was interested in helping out, and he had done no criminal cases prior of the certainly no camping cases, and he's been talking to attorneys up north and down south who have successfully done necessity defenses. Santa Barbara has done a successful necessity defense, and I'm getting a recording as I call in here, so I'm not successful. Hey, Paul Sanford, it's Free Radio Santa Cruz calling in, looking to get you to call in at 427-3772. Give us a call, and we're on till 8. So we're just going to have to do without Paul, but if you want, you can come to that trial, or it may not happen, as I said, because I think the city attorney would be a fool to let this thing proceed, because the media will spotlight it and will spotlight the inhumane quality of the camping ban on the entire city process. But perhaps the city attorney has secret sympathies with the homeless. John Barisoni, actually, in his private life, is not a bad guy. I like him. But the city attorney has been horrible, and I've called for his resignation repeatedly and his replacement. So it's hard to say what's going to happen on Monday, November 19th at 1:30, when the Camp Paradise 8 appear in court. They are being tried on an infraction. That is, it's not a misdemeanor. They just face a fine, maximum of 8 hours of community service and a $50 fine, $54 fine, actually. And Larry Templeton is similarly, he's one of the 8 defendants on this issue. But it's important because it's actually going to get some publicity. Most of the time, there are camping cases that happen all the time in courts. In fact, I checked the stats. I believe there were 20 or 30 camping citations last month. Don't let Scott Kennedy fool you. He used to say there were 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 citations a year. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, there were 20-odd citations last month, according to the stats of the police department, which I looked up today in the city council files. You can get that if you look on the FYI, the four-year information reports that are actually publicly available if you go to the city council offices down at 809 Center Street, and I invite people to do that. The Green Party also approved this letter. I mentioned the Green Party approved the resolution about asking for people, Green Party members, to remind city council members publicly and privately about the urgent winter shelter crisis, and they actually passed this. I tried for a year to get this passed, and it was vetoed. It was vetoed because, oh, it should go through the Homeless Issues Working Group. Well, this didn't go through the Homeless Issues Working Group. This went through my head right before the meeting, and I put it down, and it got passed. And, of course, it should have gotten passed a year ago. And I'm glad that we have seen an educational process in the Green Party where people are actually standing up on this issue. I think that, you know, that's the result of some activists being unwilling to pull in their horns, even if it causes embarrassment to Marty Wormhout, Catherine Byers, Ed Porter, Joe Rigney, you name it. And I'm giving poor Joe too much criticism. He's not publicly elected politician. I've just seen him at the center of this process, sabotaging a lot of homeless civil rights stuff at the Green Party level, and it's kind of upset me. And if he wants time to reply, I would be happy to give him time to reply. This was the letter which the city council, which the Green Party was presented with, and it okayed the letter, except it cut out of the letter any mention of the Greenbelt at the insistence of Joe Rigney, he doesn't just represent himself. He represents a kind of opinion which is shared by Celia Scott, Bruce Van Allen, Keith Sugar, Chris Krohn, all these environmental folks who are fanatic on keeping things okay for polo players, as Becky Johnson puts it, she has a really nice way of putting it, and joggers in the Poganip, but don't want their sacred ground despoiled by a campsite that's well-managed, that's being used as a part of a whole process to clean up the larger area because the city can't afford to hire the workers to do it. It's just, it's completely irrational, and it's outrageous that it's happening. Here's the letter. This, as I said, was passed by the Green Party, I believe, and forwarded. This letter is to let you know of our support for the proposed Santa Cruz Service Corporation under the auspices of Camp Paradise and its community of helpers. The existence of Camp Paradise is in keeping with many Green Party values. As you know, alternative sheltering, for example, the state parks camping system, continues to diminish, yet more and more local people are being pushed out into homelessness. It is already entirely appropriate for the Santa Cruz chapter Green Party to offer political support to such ventures. We stand ready to provide tangible support to this project and potentially to others in the future that are consistent with Green Party platforms on homelessness and environmental stewardship, as the Santa Cruz Service Corporation is doing. Already more than 9 or 10 green registered volunteers have become involved with individually helping Camp Paradise, including working to develop the Service Corps proposal and structure and providing specialized information and networking, to say nothing of the day-to-day support efforts. This letter informing you of our support for the SCSC is consistent with our chapter's work to date. This includes our concern that the city's camping ban be rescinded and that normal activities and behaviors which homeless people, as with everyone human, must partake, about which we have written and lobbied the council before. And this is the sentence, I believe, that was cut. We feel further that any effort to revisit the general plan would be worthwhile, including exploring use of the Poganip and other green belt areas. We support potential legal, managed public campgrounds and other possible uses which include everyone's needs rather than only the needs of relatively privileged residents. We support a plan that would not relocate Camp Paradise until a new, more suitable location is in place. We acknowledge the leadership and creativity council members have provided to date, and we look forward, and this is a little sickening, but we look forward to the council's full endorsement in creating and in establishing this humane, work-centered approach to community service, safe shelter, and community building. And the Green Party, as I understand it, passed that resolution. Or passed that letter, approved that letter. I'm not sure if it's actually made its way to the city council or is going through another committee. The Green Party is in much better shape than it was a year ago, 6 months ago, or even 3 months ago. And I think a lot of that has to do with Camp Paradise and the fact that a lot of people have been inspired by Camp Paradise and the fact that the community and the homeless community and the house community can get together and do something. And I think that Homes on Wheels can find the same thing if they can find a way to get together with supporters. And I think that other camps can do the same. And I think it is quite inspiring. Here's the article by Becky Johnson, which had to do with the controversy around the Greenbelt, and I think it's worth considering and getting into, although I know it divides people to some extent. I mean, there are Celia Scott, I want to say, is one of the few people who opposed the camping ban or the sleeping ban, parts of the camping ban. She was never entirely clear on that to me. She opposed the downtown ordinances. She opposed the attempt to make a youth curfew. She opposed the attempt we now have, the criminalization of people on the riverbank. If you're on the riverbank after dusk, that is illegal, unless you're walking through. You can't walk along the riverbank. You can only walk across the river. So watch out if you're tarrying with your partner at the watching the stars at night. That's the basis for a bust and possibly a loitering with intent, loitering in a drug area. That's one of those crimes they're coming up with. I actually talked to someone yesterday at the farmer's market who received a citation for that. He keeps going back to court. They keep telling him, come back again. Anyway, here's the letter from an article from Becky Johnson, Green Belts for Community Use or Just for Joggers and Polo Ponies, by Becky Johnson, November 11th. The Poganip is sacrosanct, trumpeted Joe Rigney of the Green Party of Santa Cruz County, and I have a blocking concern if this language is included in the final version. Why would an environmentalist oppose a plan to clean up the environment? At issue is a letter written by Linda LeMaster, which I just read, to be sent to the Santa Cruz City Council in support of Camp Paradise, the self-help encampment currently located along the east side of the San Lorenzo River, across from a tannery, under a freeway bridge, and behind a cemetery. The area had been neglected by both the local environmentalists and the city for years, as tons of trash accumulated and junkies and alcoholics frequented an area rarely visited by the police. But now the environmentalists are insistent that the camp must go. One proposal put forth at the City Council by Councilmember Ed Porter had been to temporarily borrow 2 to 3 acres on its extreme eastern edge of the Pogonip to serve as a temporary campsite for Camp Paradise to move to. The newly formed Santa Cruz Service Corps would oversee the camp. The Lemaster letter to be presented to City Council was approved by the Green Assembly with all references to the Pogonip, the Greenbelt areas, or to the Master Plan struck, per Rigney's concern, despite the efficacy of locating the camp in areas the campers would be working. The Pogonip is a 640-acre parcel of Greenbelt land purchased by the city and running between the city and the University of California, Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz has a lot of parks and Greenbelt areas. Harvey West Park has 50 acres. De La Vega Park has 565 acres. Arena Gulch has 63 acres. The Bombay property has 250 acres. In addition to these, the city owns and controls Lighthouse Field, Neary Lagoon, University Terrace Park, Arroyo Seco, Derby Park, Garfield Park, Westlake Park, Trescany Park, Lighthouse Point, Mission Plaza, San Lorenzo Park, Grant Street Park, Mike Fox Park, a lot of parks I've never heard about, Central Park, Ocean View Park, Tyrrell Park, the East Side Triangle, Star of the Sea Park, Frederick Street Park, John Franks Park, the Town Clock, the Bethany Curve, the Beach Flats Park, and the Laurel Street Park. While the city of Santa Cruz is blessed with nearly 2,000 acres of parks and greenbelt areas, it lacks the funding to maintain these parks sufficiently. Litter removal, trail restoration, invasive non-native species removal, poison oak removal, and the reestablishment of native flora are all required. The Santa Cruz Service Corps planned on establishing a series of temporary campsites in the parks and greenbelt areas and have the campers' service corps workers engage in maintenance measures in exchange for a legal place to camp. The plan would be a win-win situation for the homeless campers and for the environment. The taxpayers would benefit from it, too. But hardcore environmentalists such as Joe Rigney, Patricia Maticek, the San Lorenzo River Urban River Project Task Force, environmental attorney and council member Keith Sugar, and former Mayor Celia Scott were adamant that the council should never consider such a move. Despite all the environmental benefits the Service Corps could offer, these few squeaky wheels prevented even a discussion of temporarily using 2 to 3 acres of the Pogonip for such a purpose. And they can't stay where they are now either, now that Larry Templeton and Camp Paradise have driven off the alcoholics and junkies and have removed an estimated 24 tons of trash. The environmentalists are showing an interest in protecting this piece of the San Lorenzo River's riparian corridor. When it was covered with years of accumulated trash, buzzed night and day with the industrial noises of Saul's tannery across the river mixed with the sounds and smells of the freeway which crosses the river nearby, no environmentalist voiced a hint of concern. Homeless people can be cited for illegal camping just for using a sleeping bag while in the Pogonip. Since joggers and polo ponies are allowed to use the Pogonip, one has to wonder who is protecting what for whom. The Pogonip, where an estimated 600 campers already live, has been considered as a potential site for the campers of Camp Paradise under the supervision of the Santa Cruz Service Corps. Longtime homeless advocate Dr. Paul Lee was promoting the program, had enlisted 30 Camp Paradise people as workers, and could provide at least $50,000 in funding. But the environmentalists were apparently so opposed to homeless people using the parks and greenbelts that they rejected without examination a plan that is arguably good for the environment and can be utilized at a bargain. Councilmember Keith Sugar, acting on their behalf, led the council on October 23rd to vote to not even investigate that site or any other greenbelt site. It's been a classic case of environmentalists versus homeless rights, but it need not be. There is no reason eco-camps can't be designed and operated as just one more use of the beautiful greenbelt areas that surround Santa Cruz. To do otherwise when it's clear no environmental threat has been demonstrated is to show that the flag of environmentalism is being waved to cover up the real homeless bigotry, or anti-homeless bigotry, behind the decision to exclude exploring the Pogonip as a potential site. Somehow the answer is always no when it comes to finding a place for homeless people to camp or sleep. Celia Scott needs to stop her whispering campaign against the dirty homeless. She needs to publicly explain why she sabotaged even talking about using the Pogonip as a future site for the 50 or 60 people currently living in Camp Paradise. The public needs to hear reasonable environmental explanations why one ecologically sensitive camp cannot temporarily occupy greenbelt areas while they're engaged in restoration work, while illegal camps without the same ecological consciousness are a fact of life in these same areas. Celia Scott did not return a phone call asking for her comment. If the Poganip is unacceptable to Scott, Rigney, Matichek, and Sugar, then they need to tell the rest of the community where the people of Camp Paradise are supposed to go, and I might add where the rest of the homeless community is supposed to go. Certainly they can find 2 or 3 acres somewhere in the nearly 2,000 acres of camp of parkland for an ecologically minded work camp for homeless people. Poganip, an Ohlone word meaning either white fog or white death. The Poganip Club, which occupied the lower portions of the area in the 20s, consisted of a golf course, a polo field, and a clubhouse serving alcohol, hence the words pogo nip for polo, golfing, and nipping. Experts disagree on which word the large greenbelt area in the northern part of the city of Santa Cruz is named after. An excellent article, as usual, by Becky Johnson, who can be reached at email by at becky_johnson@sbcglobal.net. This article can be printed for free by nonprofits or not-for-profits who work for social and environmental justice. I find that quite persuasive. I mean, I might be persuaded otherwise by Keith Sugar, but Keith Sugar hasn't returned a phone call in 2 years, so it's really hard to get in touch with these accessible, progressive council members. If you want to give them a call, give them a call at 420-5017. Better still, call Friends of Camp Paradise, Carl Wilson at 425-4787, or Help Out Homes on Wheels. And a couple of numbers to Help Out Homes on Wheels. I'm going to read them again, so get your pencils, because Homes on Wheels need your help. There's Ed Meneses, and Ed Meneses' phone number is 247-7223, 247-7223. There's Kathy Massey. Her number is 464-2827, 464-2827. If you want to reach David Allen or any of the other Homes on Wheels folks, you can give Huff a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And if you want to give us a call here at the station, it's easy enough, 427-3772, 427-3772 for Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3.
Really mean is no fucking Mexican zone.
John Dine corner. It's about 6:30.
Or if you're developmentally disabled.
Or thereabouts.
Or if you're a panhandler, or if you're a hippie, or if you are part of the counterculture, if you're a former deadhead, if you're part of the rainbow people, if you're a teenager, or if you're just a poor person that can't live without a credit card. What kind of justice do you get in the city of Santa Cruz? What kind of justice did Happy John Dine get 4 years ago today at this spot? He got 2 bullets in the chest, and the police were judge, jury, and executioner for a man who committed no crime at all. No crime at all. What they accused him of doing, he didn't do. He did not point a realistic toy gun at any police officer. None of the eyewitnesses saw that, and there were quite a few eyewitnesses, at least 10, who went on the record as saying that there was nothing in Happy John Dine's hands when he was shot to death waiting for a bus at this spot. But what did the police do? Police Chief Belcher announced that Happy John Dine had gone into a combat position, refused to obey the officers and show his hands, had reached into his waist area, pulled out a very realistic toy gun, pointing at Officer Carey, necessitating him, shooting him to death. Well, that's a very dramatic version of events. Unfortunately, bears no resemblance to reality whatsoever. The only person who gave any kind of version like that was Martin Over, Connor Carey's cover-up partner, and some guy, Connor Carey's best friend, who was riding in. He was riding in the back seat of the car. This is justice. We listened to. This was the official version that the police department and the district attorney's office took, but it bore no resemblance to reality. One by one, they managed to discount every single eyewitness to this event. They said Alani Balawager, who had been watching for 10 minutes on the roof of the New Leaf during her break from work, she saw him hanging around the bus stop, watching a skateboarder go by, saw the officers pull up, and shoot him to death on the sidewalk. But she also thought she heard 3 shots. And a lot of people said, well, she probably heard an echo. But they said, oh, well, her testimony wasn't, couldn't be trusted from that. So they discounted her. They discounted Tom Murphy, who, even according to their own records, was 15 feet away at the time of the shooting. Tom Murphy, of course, called the shooting murder. So they had to discount him. He was kind of a homeless guy and not too reputable, they decided, so they discounted his testimony. That's right, after he gave his report and called, which he called the shooting murder, the cops came up to him several times over the next week and threatened his life. He was so frightened he left town. But that's what happens in this town if you tell the truth about the police brutality, about police murder, about the cover-up by the Santa Cruz Police Department, about the cover-up by the District Attorney's Office under then District Attorney Art Danner, and the cover-up by the Citizens Police Review Board, which also exonerated the officer and managed to discount any witness that disagreed with a finding of exoneration for Officer Connor Carey. But we know the truth. We've talked to enough eyewitnesses. We've read enough reports. There's absolutely no doubt in our mind that this was an unjustified shooting, probably a murder. and that Officer Connor Carey is out on the police force as we speak. He's never been disciplined. He's still on the force, and he can murder again. And every officer knows that if they murder someone, nothing will happen to them. That's the kind of town we live in.
That was Becky Johnson losing her voice here at Front and Soquel with a bullhorn compliments of John Tilking. We also have President Vinny Lombardo, who was actually the first reporter on the scene. And there's Linda LeMaster with a candle.
Steve Buckaloo and Mike Schultz. We're stopped in a car about 20 feet away. They were just driving by when they had to stop their car because the police car veered in front of them. And much to their shock, they watched Connor Carey shoot and kill Happy John Dine, a man who was just standing on the sidewalk waiting for a bus. They called it murder. A homeless man across the street witnessed it. He called it murder. Tom Murphy called it murder. Connor Carey claims that he told Happy John to not move, but the witnesses said that he didn't issue that order until after he had shot John Dine. We remember this. This was 4 years ago. There's never been any justice about it. Happy John Dine was a peaceful, gentle person who never hurt a fly. He posed no danger to this community. In fact, he added to the color and the character of this community. He opposed the sleeping ban. He opposed police brutality. And he loved his marijuana.
Marijuana.
So light up one in honor of Happy John tonight. Happy 420, everybody.
Here, here. And I see Linda LeMaster is now illegally chalking the sidewalk. I hope the police can deal with this. She's kneeling on the sidewalk. And meanwhile, Willie Torpy is walking up and down luckily it's not public property, it's private property. And Vinny Lombardo, Vinny, you were the reporter who initially broke this story for Free Radio Santa Cruz.
That's right. Unfortunately, I did.
Has the police department's policy improved since 1997 when you were one of the first people on the scene?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't improved at all. In fact, just this past summer, as you wrote on the chalk, with chalk on the sidewalk there, six officers with the Santa Cruz police fired more than 20 rounds at a man who was in a van over on Soquel Avenue in front of Lloyd's Liquor. And he was alleged to have been a bank robber, and he was killed.
He was guilty, not specifically of a... Did they suspect him of a particular crime, or was he simply a parole violator, escaped bank robber?
Raymond Quinton was alleged to have committed a string of bank robberies. He was a parole bank robber. He was convicted in 1996 of, I think, three bank robberies in the Bay Area. And
he died at the age of 29, this fused a lot of bullet.
Yeah, 29 years old. And the official report was multiple gunshot wounds to the torso. And thus far, there has been, as far as I know, no final report issued by the DA's office, although that might have happened and just been, like, glossed over in the wake of September 11th. But the six officers involved in that were exonerated within 3 days.
Who were those officers?
That would be Sergeant Escalante, Sergeant Swanick, Officer Headley, Officer Tripp, and two other officers who I'm not familiar with. One was a rookie and one was a reserve officer. and they had been staking out the area for that whole day. It was a Thursday afternoon, or excuse me, it was a Friday, and they had been staking out the area since Thursday night because his vehicle was parked in that parking lot, and they waited for him to enter his vehicle, and then they ambushed him.
Now, there was a claim that a weapon was found in his car. Was there a claim that he menaced the police with his weapon? What was the reason for the shooting?
Well, that was the claim, although no independent witnesses have verified that. The witnesses I spoke with refused to go on record with what they saw out of fear. I spoke to a number of people in the area, employees in the shopping center.
And where did this happen?
It happened at the Ocean Shopping Center. I think it's called Ocean. It's at the corner of Ocean and SoCal Avenue. There's a shopping center there where Rockin' Tacos, Radio Shack, Lloyd's Liquor. It was in that parking lot there. And I spoke to a number of witnesses that saw and heard from different angles, and none of them, not one, would come forward. One man wouldn't go on record, but he told me that he was approached by the FBI and told not to speak about what he saw.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, listening to a discussion of the Raymond Quinton slaying by police this summer at the Happy John Dine Memorial, which happened on Monday evening at Soquel and Front Streets, where Happy John Dine was shot 4 years ago on November 12th, 1997. A homeless activist who was accused of pointing a toy gun at the police, a fact denied by 10 eyewitnesses. And we're actually hearing the memorial and some testimony from Vinnie Lombardo, who is the first man on the scene of the Happy John Dine slaying and is talking about a more recent police slaying.
I was harassed by one of the owners of one of those stores for trying to speak with one of his employees, and I was told to leave. A couple of employees at Radio Shack confirmed to me off the record that he had no gun, that he never pointed a weapon. Now, although that's what the police claim, that he pointed a weapon at them. But really, it can't be verified.
What time did this happen? What time of day was the shooting?
That was Friday, June 29th, at about 1 or 2 in the afternoon.
And was there a subsequent statement by Chief Belcher about this case?
Yeah, there was. Well, what happened was, after the initial 20 or 30 shots were fired by the police, there was sort of a quote-unquote standoff because he was still alive, and he alleged, according to the police report that was issued actually by Lieutenant Habe, later that day, he taunted the officers to kill him. What ended up happening was, after more than 2 hours, the Santa Cruz County Bomb Squad was brought in, and a tactical unit was sent in. And what they did was they sent in a robot, the Santa Cruz County robot cop. And that...
Officer Perry?
No, not that one.
Not RoboCop.
An actual robot, yeah, which is equipped with a camera, and they were able to view his lifeless body in the van. So then they sent in a attack squad in this like armored personnel carrier, and they set off some flashbang grenades, and they went in and recovered his body, and he was dead.
Now, some claim that he was denied medical aid until it was too late to help him. What's your perspective?
That's my perspective, is exactly how you stated it. I got there after the shooting, and the whole area was cordoned off. Traffic was backed up for miles, and both intersections were closed for a block in each direction. And they were saying that it was for the public's safety, you know, that they had to do that, but they weren't letting in any medical. They finally brought in a helicopter, but then they waved the helicopter off. They never allowed an ambulance to come through. And they're claiming that it was because he was armed and that he was a potential threat. But who knows? You know, I mean, once they get a scene cordoned off away from prying eyes, they can do and say what they want. And that's the unfortunate reality.
Now, of the witnesses you spoke with, were any of them eyewitnesses to what happened? Did they give you any elucidation at all as to what happened?
A number of them did, yes. I was told by a number of them that they had been staking out the area all day, undercover cops, plainclothes officers, and FBI officers as well. Officials, FBI officials were there as well.
Did they see the actual situation of shooting? Did they see whether there was a gun, perhaps in a combat stance, pointed at the police officers?
No, they didn't see a gun. Well, the one witness that confirmed that to me off record said he did not see a gun. He said, in fact, there was no gun. He said, don't believe what you're being told on the news.
Obviously a terrorist. Did you report this man to the police department?
No, I didn't.
Well, perhaps we can report you to the police department. Any comments about how the police department is proceeding in terms of policies for review of lethal force incidents?
I haven't been paying too much attention to the Santa Cruz Police Department as of late, but I have to assume that no, they have not reviewed any of their policies, and no, it doesn't seem that they have corrected any of these problems where they shoot first and ask later.
Use expanding bullets, do they not? Dum-dum bullets?
I don't know.
That's what I've heard. Again, I don't want to give false information. That was my understanding. Soft center bullets. And also that they are trained to shoot to kill rather than, let's say, to wound.
Yeah, that's what I'm aware of as well, yes.
They also have a nice new target practice range in the police department.
They do, and they're a brand new, $13.5 million police station?
$7 million cost overrun, and the city council is lapping it up.
Yeah, it's a tragedy.
The city council is dishing it out while the police department is lapping it up. We've been talking to Vincent Lombardo, whose radio show,
Rockin' the Boat,
is on every
Wednesday evening at 9 p.m.
Tune in the evening and 96.3, and you won't be disappointed.
That's right.
You're still tuned to 96.3, Bathrop Spears Broadside, Civil Rights on the Streets. Here's an interview from the Farmers Market with medical marijuana activist David Harding.
We're here at the Farmers Market about 3:10. We're talking to
David Harding.
And David, you're an old-time fighter for medical marijuana.
Yeah.
In fact, you pointed out to me that 5 years ago today, council member, perhaps then mayor, Mike Rodkin, declared today National Medical Marijuana Day.
Here in the city of Santa Cruz.
City Marijuana Day.
City Santa Cruz Medical Marijuana Day.
Right, of course, this is the same city council that has refused to allow Kate Wells's cannabis pharmaceuticals to survive. It went down last year because Mayor Sugar would not declare a medical marijuana emergency. You yourself have had a kind of a falling out with the one, I don't want to, quasi-legal or at least acknowledged organization in town, WAM. WAM stands for?
Women and Men's Alliance for Medical Marijuana.
And you yourself were a part of that, but you were accused of what, stealing money or?
Being a major pot dealer and stealing from their medical marijuana garden.
And this is because you provided grow systems to people who were outside the WAM system?
Yeah, in accordance with city law, which I helped did write some of, I had obtained a business license and a state franchise tax board ID number, and could not charge for the product itself but by the hour of the time I put into it. And that started taking off, and had a parting out with WAM, being that I was doing something that was not conducive to being a member of WAM. So some stories
helping
were
people who for medical marijuana?
Yeah. A lot of patients that are quadriplegics, most of them with acquired injuries, cannot make it to a WAM meeting, or they don't want to be seen going into a distribution center for their own personal private reasons.
Mm-hmm. I see you have a man in a wheelchair with you today. Is that the person you're helping?
Supplying with illegal marijuana?
I am educating him how to provide for himself a natural source of medicine within the guidance of California law, which the voters had passed.
Well, what's to be done to, we understand that there are now threats of attacks on WAM now that El Dorado and L.A. clubs have been closed. I'm naturally sympathetic to any medical marijuana club, but I'm concerned that WAM has done nothing to support the needs of a majority of the medical marijuana people in this town who who need access to medical marijuana. What do you think of that charge?
It's a pretty exclusive club to get in. After me suing the Sheriff's Department, it still took me a year before I was accepted. And of course, I only have a head trauma, which leaves me with seizures. It's almost, it's pretty much exclusive, which is known by members and non-members alike. You're not a rubber stamper for the board. You know, you get inferior medicines from WAM, lower grade. And a lot of people have walked away from WAM, being members of WAM. And others, of course, have joined it. But the novelty wears off when any of your ideas are put on the back burner to further patients getting their natural source of medicine.
Well, I know that, as I said, I didn't see WAM coming forward to support the 600 to 800, I guess to 1,000. Needed to declare a medical marijuana emergency, but refused to return any calls to Kate Wells. I think that Valerie Corral, who heads WAM, could have had a significant impact on that, but chose not to. Instead, parades around Mother Jones and the pages of the Slick magazines showing off her physique. I don't regard that as particularly helpful unless you are, you know, acting on behalf of the entire community of people. I don't know, am I being too harsh on this woman?
Not really. I don't, you know, personally, I don't believe so. When I was a member of WAM when Detective John... Jim Hart and Dan Campos visited my house and seized my garden.
What year was that?
That was in 97, April 97. Just after, 4 months after 215 had passed. I took civil action against him and, of course, received it back under guidance of Tracy, Sheriff Mark Tracy, and Kim Allen.
You won some money?
At the time, I was a little nervous about taking monetary damages. I figured I kicked him in the balls once by forcing him to give me back my pot.
Kick him again, man.
Yeah, I should have.
That way they make sure that they don't come back,
But anyway,
a third time.
After they raided me and seized my 18 plants, my argument was that they violated California law by illegally seizing my prescribed medication. They are not licensed physicians in California to effectively and immediately cut a patient off of a medicine. I asked WAM members and WAM for support to show up at the courthouse with me, and of course no one did. But it was only after that I received my property back and my cannabis that I was rendered a hero, but no one stepped forth.
Support. What about those phonies over at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, did they help you at all?
For storing some of my equipment when I did get back. I think there was
What about Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the radio show? Did you get any support from them?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Just like
that fine Robert Norris that you're talking to. Did he support you?
Yeah, fine Robert Norris.
Yeah, so there.
Yeah. Becky Johnson.
Well, anything else you want to say regarding the medical marijuana scene or anything else?
Well, the voters passed on it, and there's been seven other states, and that adds up to probably 8-9 million people that have voted for this. And so with the new administration and George W. Bush's administration, with the new attorney general and the FBI director and new DEA, they might come down. But what we got to do is if you're not growing at home, you got a recommendation, start. Back it up. Back up your vote by taking action.
Are there any new clubs forming that you recommend people get involved with?
Not to my knowledge, not in the immediate area.
Smoke in at city council might be appropriate.
That would be nice to see. I'm all for it. I'll show up. Board of supervisors. I'm board of supervisors.
That's for sure, man. Smarty Wormhout. I don't know what to say. Anyway. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Robert.
And that was David Harding at the Farmers Market yesterday talking about his experiences with medical marijuana and the frustrations of dealing with WAM, local club. Here's an incoming call. Hi, you're on free radio.
Yeah, this is Mad Mike the Wonder Dog.
Hey there, Mad Mike.
Yeah, I want everybody to hear this and listen up. motherfucking cops just came down my camp, took my fucking dog, Sealy, animal control. Never bit anybody. And I'm like, they're just saying, too vicious. They just put him in a dog pound, you know, and, you know, they're doing little fascist bullshit tactics. And the dog didn't bite anybody. He just, some people came to my camp, and he was, luckily he was on a leash, and he's just doing his job, right? So they just come down and took my fucking dog away.
Now, you, Mike, you live outside, right?
Yeah, I'm homeless.
And you have been threatened with violating your parole being violated if you continue to sleep outside?
Yep.
So the camping ban, I've also heard a second person tell me that she had her, Officer Seeley threatened to violate her probation if she continued to sleep outside. So it looks like the police...
They're trying to make me go in a hotel room. You know, I'm homeless by choice. I can pay for, I can pay $450 or $500 a month for a room in a hotel room, like a minimum security fucking prison camp with cameras and fucking snitches and no dogs, no pets, no visitors, no nothing. No smoking, and all this bullshit, you know, and maybe stay there 5 or 6 nights of goddamn month, or I could just live free like my ancestors have. I'm Choctaw, Cherokee, Indian, Mexican, black, and my ancestors lived in the bush, eat with fingers, look up at blue sky. My other ancestors on the Indian side lived in teepees before the United Snakes of America Miners came, USSA. Anyway.
Mad Mike, what's going to happen? Hello. Hey, ooh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to your... Hello?
What?
What's going to happen to your dog?
They want doggy psychologists on him, and if he don't pass the test, they're going to euthanize him.
They're going to kill him.
They're going to kill him.
I see.
He's never bitten anyone.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm homeless, and they forced me. They want me to move away from Camp Snoopy, which is near Camp Paradise, you know. And the dog, I got signs warning people, if they come too close to my camp, the dog will attack them. I had them on a leash, so these workers come down there. And they're talking about clearing everybody's shit away. They're going to come down next week, and they're going to fucking with trucks and all kinds of probably labor ready again. Use the homeless to attack the homeless and clear everybody's camps out all up and down the fucking river.
Are they talking about Camp Paradise, too?
Everybody. Everybody.
Now, who said that?
Sealy. Sealy is some other motherfucker. And I talked to Escalante, too, Sergeant Escalante.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying next week, they gave me till next week. And they said they're coming down, and they're going to fucking, they're clearing everybody off the river.
Maybe it's time to start clearing the council members out of their houses. What do you think?
Yeah, something like that.
Hey, thank you for calling in.
All right, cool. Long live the revolution, you know, coup d'etat, freedom of mayor, you know.
Hey, take
care. Masturbate and smash the fascist police state, mate.
Haven't heard that for a while.
Yeah, really.
Thank you.
All right.
And that was Mad Mike the Wonder Dog, who used to have his own show here on Free Radio and was part of the 7.5-month-long city council protest vigil, the protest that Dan Hopkins and Sean Alimi did in 1996 trying to end the sleeping ban. Hopefully this winter we can do better. Having built on the work of a lot of people, you stand on the shoulders of giants, as we know. Reaching the end of Bathurst Spears Broadside's about to go into Earth First with Uncle Dennis. That'll be happening very shortly. We're going to play you a little bit of tape here before we go and invite you to return on Sunday between 11 and 1:30 in the afternoon when Bathurst Spears Broadsides returns. I'm your host, Robert Norse. And between times, you can call Huff at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We'll be talking about the Santa Barbara changes in the law, which are helping out vehicular campers. Santa Barbara is helping while Santa Cruz is standing still, or actually going backwards, under Emily Riley's misleadership, you might say, or misleadership. It ain't leadership. It's kind of the opposite of leadership. Let's hear some interviews, and let's then segue into Uncle Dennis's show. Thanks for being with us, and come back again. Meantime, be out there on the streets, keep your eyes open, and speak up when you see injustice happening or when you have questions about what's going on. Jack in the Box Land, talking to
Moses.
And you were a man who was caught giving a woman a ride on the handlebars of your bicycle the other day.
Yeah.
Don't you feel guilty and ashamed about that?
Oh, yes. I'm such a bad, bad man.
All right. Well, I'm glad you understand that, and I think we can give you contrition at this particular time, my son. Now,
I am redeemed.
Now, did you get a ticket for that or just a warning?
Just a warning. They threatened a ticket, though. I don't know which for which law.
I don't know. Being colorful without a permit?
Maybe too much fun.
Now, you say that the next day or so, Sergeant Baker approached you?
He didn't approach me. He approached my friends. He gave one of my friends a ticket for juggling. Said that he was blocking the sidewalk.
Now, did you observe this process, or did you just hear about it?
Yeah, I watched.
Did Sergeant Baker walk up to the juggler and ask him to move before he gave the ticket?
No, he just pulled out his ticket book and said, "I'm giving you a ticket for blocking the sidewalk."
Completely bogus. You have to ask someone to move before you can charge them with blocking the sidewalk. Sergeant Baker, however, is the master of bogus tickets.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, one kid got 2 tickets in a half an hour for nothing.
What were the other tickets that were given?
Oh, everything. Playing hacky sack, fucking just having our stuff out. Like if our stuff was leaned up against something or laying down, they'd either come and ask who it was, and if nobody claimed it, they'd take it. And
when was this juggling ticket given, or blocking the sidewalk?
I guess it was last weekend, maybe middle of last week.
So we're Monday today, so like Wednesday or Thursday or Friday?
Probably Friday.
And about what time of day?
Like 3:34.
And
maybe later.
What was the reaction of the crowd to Baker's ticket?
Oh, there was like 70 people standing around watching, just saying, "What the fuck is he doing? He can't do that." And he's just, he was tripping out.
Did he give another ticket later? Earlier.
I'm sure he gave quite a few after that. I can't really remember that good.
Sergeant Baker gave 4 tickets out in like 45 minutes.
And what were those tickets for?
Hacking, juggling, sitting down on the rail and sitting down by the wall under a cover.
You were a witness to this?
Yeah.
And do you wish to identify yourself for the purposes of free radio?
No, not really.
What time of day did this happen?
Right around the time you said.
Remember what day?
About a week ago.
And if you were a police officer and you had seen this scene happen, would you have felt there was any justification for giving out tickets?
No.
Any comments for free radio?
No more. I just think they should lighten up against all the kids around town.
Were these tickets all by Baker, or were they by other officers too?
I say about 75% of them are from Sergeant Baker.
We are the public, and that city is ours too. You can't just run us out of it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, Linda, you said there have been 4 stories about Sergeant Baker you heard about in the last couple hours.
Yeah, I'm getting to where I'm not sure I can remember one from the other, because almost everywhere we've been since leaving the Happy John Dine Memorial, his name has come up and the people we've met.
What have you heard?
Yeah. Who would you give it to?
The kids down there where the guy was coming to town for a rave. And the girl that was underage has been bullied. He mentioned Baker. That's one of the few cops' names he could remember. I forget what the incident was. And then 2 guys in line here. What was the other one? Oh, there were 2 guys that are campers that were on the street.
Corner of Soquel.
Yeah, and one of them has freezing cold hands. And they were talking about campers. They kept all their language generic. They were a little younger than me, I'd say, but they might be ex-vets. One of them was an Indian or Hawaiian person. He talked about Warren Baker. And they were talking about there not being safe places for them to unroll their bedroll at night. They didn't say where it wasn't safe. I don't think they wanted to say where they had.
How did Baker come into this?
I don't know. I didn't talk long enough. They were just saying that they met some cops that were consistently mean. And I said, like who? And they mentioned 2 names. I forgot the other because I'd never heard of it before. And Butchie Baker. So, I didn't get the feeling those guys spent a lot of time on the mall, and all the other stuff we've heard tonight are people in the downtown mall, and it seems like young people.
Thank you, Linda. That's Linda LeMaster.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. We've been here 6.5 years, and we'll be here 6.5 more years if we can just get a little help from our friends.
They just don't know what's in my heart and why I love you so. I love you, baby, like a mine of love gold. Come, yeah, baby, let the good time roll. When it's understood, it's even nicer when you're feeling good. Got me flipping like a flag on a pole. Come, yeah, baby, let the good time roll. People live and make believe. They got a lot of dirt up their sleeve. Wonder why, baby, you treat me so cold. Come, yeah, baby, let the good time roll.
Yeah.
so hard. Got to say, Lord, it's hard. You say, penny make a nickel make a dime will make you half, and a half will make a dollar. Make you holler. Give me whiskey when I get a little frisky. Go get the mighty good drink. Bye. now. If I Tina was a mile ago, I want a child like Tina now. Here a boy now, for a boy now. Can you hear me calling you? You are three times of it, baby, and you know what you want to do. Some lonely, lonely nights. Oh, baby, yes, since you've been gone. Lay my head on my pillow. Oh, how I cried all night long. The thing you used to say to me. for you, baby. Baby, you know that you rule me, woman. Baby, you know that I was a fool for you, baby.
Well, I'll be John Brown.